With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to That Gabby Roslin Podcast, part of the Acast Creator Network. My guest this week is Sebastian Croft, star of Heartstopper, the biggest show on the planet on Netflix at the moment. He was also in Horrible Histories, the movie. He talks about being in musicals as a child, and we discuss his casting as young Bond in the musical version of Bond. That bit we do discuss, but it's not actually real. I do hope you enjoy listening to this. He is so lovely. Please, can I ask you a favour? Would you mind following and subscribing, please? By clicking the follow or subscribe button. This is completely and utterly free, by the way. And you can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts, which is the purple app on your iPhone or iPad. Simply scroll down to the bottom of all of the episodes. I know there have been quite a few now. And you'll see the stars where you can tap and rate and also please write a review. Thank you so much. Sebastian Croft, my kids say thank you very much for Heartstoppers. I say thank you very much. And I know the whole community say thank you very much. Oh, my word. Had you any idea when you were making it that Heartstoppers was going to be a worldwide hit?
No. And even hearing you say that is mental. It's insane. I think I had an idea of it meaning a lot to some people because it meant a lot to me, just the books. But no, this is crazy what is happening. It's kind of what you always hope for a project, but just I'd never expected this kind of reaction. So it's insane.
It is a bit. And I love the way, so we've spoken before, and I love the way you're excited about it without being that sort of fake flappy hand showbiz excited.
Yeah.
You know, people are going, oh, it is. You're just, okay, this is fantastic. It's like you're embracing what's happening for all the right reasons.
I think genuinely, sometimes promoting something that you don't love is really difficult. And this...
Oh, what did you do that you don't love?
Oh,
yes!
No.
Yes, straight in.
No, but even things that you kind of do like on a surface level, like even most projects are you're very lucky if it's something that you love and you like the people who are making it and you're proud of what you did. But it's very rare that you get this extra level, which I feel with this project, with Heartstopper specifically, that it feels like it really deeply means a lot to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And so talking about that has been very important, not only for other people, but also for myself, because I had such a strong connection to the book when I first read it. And the people who made it, and for so many reasons, and it's a shame that it is, but it feels very new that so many queer people have been involved in telling a queer story. And it's just also these people have become some of my best friends. My life is with the project or not, like with Heartstopper or not, it's these people have become really close and really a big part of my life. I'm gonna say English so people know what I'm actually saying. They've become some of my best friends. So now it's like all of the people who I'm closest to are doing well at the same time, which is such a beautiful thing. It's so rare that you get to go on this experience as a group of people as well. Yeah.
That's okay. Let's go back to the beginning then.
Yes.
Not of you. Let's go. Let's just do Heartstoppers, and then we're going to go back and do talk about other things. But so Alice does these graphic novels.
Yes.
They're massive. She's big on social media. The show, then people, there's whispers about the show. How soon did you hear that you were up for it or auditioning? I mean, talk me through all of that.
Yeah. So I got sent an audition for this project called Heartstopper. And my agent said, they're the most beautiful books, like go read them. And often when a script is based on a book, it's kind of, you'll go and read it or find out about it. But I am really, really dyslexic. Reading is so scary for me. I have like a lot of fear from school of being, you know, embarrassed or feeling like I'm stupid because of struggling with reading. So I can't just pick up a book and read it in a day. So I went to get the book with the intention of reading a few pages, getting a gist of what it was about. And I just found myself finishing the book in a day, like in the afternoon. And that afternoon going back and getting the second and third book.
This is a graphic novel.
A graphic novel, yeah. Sorry. And it was such a joyous, but also important, but also kind of liberating book. And it felt so celebratory. It's just, it was amazing. And finishing it in that first day and then going and finding the second and third. And I had this horrible feeling in my stomach of like, I don't know what I'm going to do if I don't get this one.
Wow. Okay. That's a big, big for an actor.
And it's not just to say that, like I sent my agent a voice note basically saying that, like, I've never done that with a project before. Just saying, I have to be a part of this in some way. It felt so important. It felt so rare. It felt so, just you could feel this thing existing just outside of the story, this like this magic of whatever the Heartstopper magic is. And I just felt like I had to be a part of it. And so sent off my audition, and then I was out in Atlanta filming another show, and I'd been doing like a week of night shoots, and my agent called me and was like, oh, you've got a Zoom with Alice and Eros, the director, and Daniel Edwards, the casting director. And I'd come back, and I think I got in at about 8 in the morning, and then my Zoom was like at 11. So I had like an hour's sleep.
Oh,
it'd been like a long week, like a long slog of filming.
Yeah, but you're only 20. It's fine. You don't need sleep.
It didn't feel like that. And the audition was just, I still is a bit of a blur in terms of like, I was running on about 2 hours of sleep. And I left the audition and I was like, I have no idea how that went. I was also that this thing of like being in an audition room with someone who like Alice was there, and I was like, oh my God, it's Alice. But you can't say that, because I was like, I've got to be a professional. I've got to do work. And then a few days later, I found out that I got the part of Ben, which was amazing, very exciting. You've wanted something so badly that hearing it took like quite a few days to kind of, yeah. I just kept remembering like, oh my God, this is going to happen. Like, that's really cool.
So were you more excited about that than you were when you heard you got Game of Thrones and you were sitting in school?
The genuinely nice thing, and I feel very fortunate about this, is that everything I've done has felt like a step in the right direction, if that makes sense. Like, Game of Thrones was, I think, the first film or TV thing I ever got. And so, and it's Game of Thrones. Like,
yeah.
So, at the time, that was the biggest possible thing that could have happened in my universe of life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And I feel like the same about Heartstopper for that point in my life. I also feel like, especially with Heartstopper, but with kind of every project, that I think if I'd auditioned for Heartstopper even a year before, I probably wouldn't have felt kind of the same
confidence
to do it. And I feel the same about quite a lot of projects. I feel like I'm usually about at the earliest I possibly could be to do that thing. And then you kind of grow on and learn on the job.
So we'll carry on with Heartstopper if we may. So it's very important to the queer community, this show. And it's interesting, you and I talked already about the very lovely Russell T. Davis,
yes,
who I've known a long time and I completely adore. And he posted about your show. And I know you met him as well.
Yeah.
And for somebody like him to be so supportive, and your show is about love. And what's so lovely is in the community, very often there's a lot of shows about it. So yeah. I think It's a Sin was one of the best things ever to have been on television.
Wow.
And obviously they were talking about AIDS. Pose, I was obsessed with. I mean, I yeah. literally just devoured it. But there was a lot of heartbreak.
Yes.
And it was a tough watch.
Yeah.
This Heartstopper is about love.
Yeah.
It is about the community, but it is about love.
Yeah.
That underlies everything about it.
Yeah.
And it's simple. And I mean that in the, I hope in at the Alice, when she listens to this, hello, Alice.
Hey, Alice.
but to all of you, I mean simple in a very loving way. I yeah. hope you understand.
Yeah, completely.
For me, that's why this works.
That simplicity is why I think it also connects with people who aren't queer, or like my dad loved the show and cried his eyes
out.
He
must be the proudest dad.
Oh, yeah. He also was like, you're a little shit. Like, stop being mean to Charlie. I was like, Dad, it's not me.
That shows what a good actor you are.
Yeah. No, my parents didn't like me being mean on screen. But I think that simplicity is why everyone can connect with it, because like you said, at the end of the day, it's just about two young people falling in love. And the Russell T. Davies thing is, I don't think he fully will understand the impact that he's had on a lot of young people and their ability to feel confident telling stories, but also just to be able to tell stories. I don't think Heartstopper would exist without him, because I don't
wow.
think... Well, because, wow. because I think that it wouldn't necessarily have... There would, like, people wouldn't have the confidence in queer shows doing well, because he's paved the way. Even when we were making Heartstopper and It's a Sin was coming out, there was this feeling of like, oh, queer shows can do really well. And It's a Sin just took the world by storm. And seeing that, I think it's, yeah, he's done so much, and he's so lovely. Like,
isn't he?
I've only met him once, and it was last weekend. And he genuinely cares about everyone. And I was with Joe, who plays Charlie, and we both were with him, and he just gave us so much time and so much advice and was so lovely. And I think it's people like him that really not only open the doors, but then jam it open so that other people can
absolutely.
Come through.
So, two things to say about that. Joe's grandfather contacted me.
No.
Joe's grandfather to tell me how lovely you were.
Oh.
Said you're not like your character.
Okay, good.
There we go.
Thank
so
you.
So that, which I thought was very sweet. So when you speak to Joe, do tell him. And I must message him back. But also, so we spoke a week ago.
Yes.
And so when I was doing my research on you the day before, and social media is very important these days. You know about casting. They look at how many people yeah. follow you, all of this stuff. Obviously, you've got to be a great actor as well. But there you were with 100,000 followers, and now you've got 500,000 followers, and the impact that you're making on young people is enormous. Do you feel like you're carrying something that you weren't expecting to carry now on your shoulders? That's a very heavy question.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. And the pause is mainly because this last week, I feel like I haven't fully at all processed what is going on. The fact that so many people have watched the show and then engaged with us on things like social media is insane. I think just being part of this show, I was aware that there would be a responsibility with just feeling, I feel like especially people who have read the graphic novels, it feels like these characters have jumped out of the book and onto the screen and then onto Instagram, and they're real living people.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's very interesting.
And I think that comes with a certain amount of responsibility. There was a certain amount of fear that people loved these characters, and would they feel the same about the show? Because often book adaptations, people feel like weren't representative of how they perceived it when they read it. So there's that element of it. But also, like you said, I guess carrying a weight of feeling like whenever you're telling a story that hasn't necessarily been told or is of people who don't usually get a story front and center, you feel this responsibility to represent more than just yourself and kind of speak for a wider community. And I think there's an element of that, but also there now is a big community out there. I mean, we were we met Russell at the Craft BAFTAs, and there was a party before that, which was the kind of pre-BAFTA party. And I ended up standing and chatting to Shooty from Sex Education, Amari from It's a Sin, and Callum from It's a Sin. And
isn't he lovely, Colin?
Oh,
Callum.
Yes. Yeah, they're like all of the loveliest people. But there was this moment where I was stood in this circle and we were actually talking about this sense of feeling like a responsibility and I just feel like it could feel like Heartstopper is, or the cast of Heartstopper have this kind of, I guess, bigger responsibility. And I think that it does come with that, but I guess overwhelmingly it feels like there's so many people out there who are also representing that same community and who are wanting to tell these stories, and so many fresh, young, excited people who have yet to come, which I think I just feel like part of this big, wonderful family, rather than this sense of, oh God, I've got to represent everyone.
Yeah. There's a young man I work with. He's 24. And what he said to me about your show was that he wished he'd seen a show like this.
Mm.
For him, yeah, when he was 15 and 16, where he was, I'll put it politely, he said he wasn't particularly nice to people because he didn't understand what was happening. And there was nothing like that on television.
I think the response also comes with a slight melancholy for a lot of people, which is not only did most people not have that experience who are older, but it's not a fair representation. Like, I think really, whilst it has honesty to it, it's probably the most positive representation of what it is to be at school and to be a queer person that's out there. So I think there's this weird mix of incredibly hopeful, incredibly uplifting, but also there was actually someone wrote an article about talking about this sense of, it's beautiful, but I wish I'd had this, and feeling kind of sad that,
yes,
that they didn't.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, I was really badly bullied at school. And if you're ever different in any way, and
look, I wonder what they'd say now.
I had a beautiful moment, which was
someone
who was part of a group chat, which basically was about me and saying like, oh, his clothes are so gay, he's so this, he's so that.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
Messaged me saying, oh, hey, mate, it's been so long, like, you know, we should go for a drink. And I was like, oh, glorious.
And you did say no.
I just didn't reply.
Good for you.
Fantastic. But like, the sad thing is that a lot of people continue to experience bullying, especially for being different and especially for being queer. And it's really shit. And whilst Heartstopper is like a safe haven and a space that hopefully people feel a warmth and a happiness and a pride for who they are, it also, I think for a lot of people, comes with a sense of like, I wish I had this when I was younger.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Absolutely. I think diversity on screen is so important. And we talk about diversity a lot. And there needs to be people of all colours. Yeah. There needs to be people of all sexualities. There needs to be people of all ages.
And I think...
And everybody needs that to look at.
Yeah.
You know, I've interviewed so many people who've said that, you know, Rob Beckett, who says that when he was growing up, there was nobody like him on television.
Yeah.
So he thought it could never happen.
Well, of all, like 100%, and I completely agree, but I don't think I understood the value of good representation until Heartstopper.
Yeah.
Because we've had someone tweeted that they used one of the scenes in the later episodes where Nick comes out to his mum. They kind of watched that with their family and then kind of used that to open up the conversation about coming out to their parents. And I think just, I didn't realize how little representation and how little, like the first time I saw two guys get married, I think was on Modern Family, which as in itself is kind of like a fun family show, not really talking about.
But it's a lovely
the deeper,
show. Oh, I
yeah,
love
yeah.
Modern
I mean,
Family.
We love it. But I think, and I must have been 12 or, and I don't know. It's just, I hadn't even realized how little queer content I'd been exposed to until recently. And I think that representation is something that is spoken about so much, but genuinely makes a huge difference to people's lives when they feel like they're seen.
Of course.
And I think that.
But I think it's across the board.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really important. And for all young people that to know that if they think, you know, if they're the person that's being bullied about the way they dress or because they can't read or because I was always teased because I loved musical theatre.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a TV presenter and everyone's like, oh, you. And you just think, no, that everybody needs somebody that they can look up to, that they can see. Not that they worship. It's just, oh, if they did it, then I can do it. You know, and I think that's really important. Where did this drive for being an actor come from? Because you were very young when you first were on stage. I mean, you did was Oliver your very first thing?
I did Chitty, my first professional thing. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. It was on tour. It came to my local theatre, which was in Oxfordshire. And I played, well, I was cast, they had like a group of local kids. And then within that, they had a few people who had speaking lines. And I got the part of the toy maker's son, who has the pivotal line in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Go on.
Have you got any... Oh, I've fluffed it.
No!
Is it... I can't remember whether it's have
audition.
You got
no,
any toys.
No, don't try.
Or
no,
have you got any more toys? No. I'm sorry.
No, you lost
I lost
that.
It. That you spark, that thing I had when I was seven, is gone.
You lost the part.
but it was like, it was such a cool thing to have a line. It meant I got a microphone.
Of course.
I loved it. And I spent the whole time pestering the director, being like, can I do more? And
really? At seven?
Well, so it's something I've kind of spoken about a lot, which is kind of, I guess, how do you get into acting or like, where does it come from? And it was never a conscious thing. It was never like, oh, I want to be a movie star or I want to be famous. It was, I used to put on plays in my living room. I used to do magic tricks. I used to play the piano. Like if you came over to my house when I was 7, 6, 8, 9, 19, 20, you know, I'd pull you into the living room, throw on some costumes and I'd start an improvised show that would end when you were built up the courage to say, I've got to go now. I would just like go on and on. And I just loved entertaining people, making people laugh. And so when I got the opportunity to do that on a stage and I realized that you could make a career out of this and that this was a thing and also wasn't just me being the annoying little brother, but was actually something that my friends could come and see and think, oh, that's so cool, you're on stage. It started to feel like this tangible art form that I was discovering, not realizing that that's what it was. And so I've just been chasing that feeling since.
Yeah. I get it. From the age of three, that's all I wanted to do. So yeah. I absolutely get it. And I love that you say you weren't thinking about fame because it wasn't about fame. I get the feeling for you that that's a byproduct. That's not what you're aiming for.
I also feel lucky that I started in the theatre, and especially by the time I got to perform on the West End, which was kind of always had been my dream and aspiration. And it was such an amazing feeling. But also, you see these musical theatre stars or these people who have just done 2 hours of the most incredible singing, the most incredible acting, the most incredible dancing, absolutely killed themselves. And then you go out the stage door, maybe there's a few people to sign a programme of, and then you get on your bike or you get on the tube and you go back home. And there's this, it's not at all as glamorous in the theatre as people often think it is. Like, I remember seeing like Mice and Rats backstage and like, it's just...
And you, it's hard work.
People have to sweat and tears and blood. And so I think growing up and seeing how much people sacrifice and how hard it is to even get a job. And then once you've got a job, it's still, that's not all, it doesn't become all easy. So I think starting in the theatre gave me a huge respect and appreciation for the work and what really matters rather than like Instagram and parties and clothes, like all this stuff that's great. And if you do it right, that stuff can become something that amplifies your work, I think.
And fun, make sure it's always fun.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
not the be all and end
but
all.
But it's not
everything.
It's not the end game.
So obviously we have to talk about your parents because, you know, it is, there you were at 7 years old doing shows and now then you're Game of Thrones. Many things. And your star is rising. Do your parents, when you come back from a day, do they just say, hello, dear, sit down, let's have supper. And it's just that happens to be your job. Or did they help you? Did they push you? Did they keep you back? You know, what's that like?
I think that for a lot of kids who start in theatre, there's usually this kind of another force who's in some ways encouraged them or pushed them towards that, which is fine and great, but... not at all the case with my parents. And this isn't to say that they weren't at all encouraging. They have gone above and beyond in supporting me, but this was never their dream or their world. They both have normal jobs that do fun, normal things. I think I really pestered them to go to auditions and stuff like this. But my God, I feel so grateful for everything that they've done. Aww. Like my dad still does self-tapes with me, which is when you're auditioning for something and basically the first round is usually you filming yourself at your home. But like the amount of hours that my parents and my brother and sister have spent in the car driving me to auditions, because we lived in Oxfordshire when I was younger. And so it was like 45 minutes an hour each way to get into London. So if I wanted to go for an audition, that was like a day for one of the members of our family. That was like a day from the weekend. And then when you get in a show, my parents would go up to London, do a day's work, wait. And then at 11, when I finished a show, drive me back and then get me up at 7 for the school. Like,
you all must have been exhausted.
But like my point is only that it's not this kind of foreign world that's just existed and that they're like, oh, sweetie, that's lovely. Like, let's have dinner. They are as much a part of it as I am. And I think that's the thing about going into the arts. It's like, it's never just you. It's kind of a commitment from your community to support you through it. Because like, even 6 months ago, I had a project that I'd been cast in and then it got like pulled from under my feet, feeling like that. And was like, it just, it really like hurt and was really hard. And I was just crying my eyes out. And my parents and my agent, like that community of people were there to scoop me up and help me get back on the horse, as it were.
Lovely. That's so important.
Whether they like it or not, they're very much part of it.
Okay, so let's talk about Oscars because of Amelia and because of Olivia. I mean, please.
So,
Horrible Histories.
Yes.
I met you very briefly at Horrible Histories at the big showbiz opening. And that was such fun. And you were in that. In fact, my daughter was watching it the other day. Again, that was lovely. It's a lovely film. And you were in it with Amelia, who is in Coda. And is outstanding.
Ridiculously good.
Oh, my word. Are you still in touch with her?
Yes, still in touch with her. It's just, I'm like, it's so lovely when good people do good things.
I'm so pleased that you say she's good, because I get the Coda. She's
her and her whole family, they are the sweetest people. And like, it also is insane because we used to like play in her garden and would talk about, you know, like Timothy Chalamet, Saoirse Ronan, these kind of young idols that we had of, oh my God, did you see the Oscars? Or, oh my God, did you watch the BAFTAs? And for like 3 years later, for her to be in those rooms being nominated for a BAFTA and so thoroughly deserved, she's incredible.
Yeah, and, she really is.
And also I feel like, she won't know this, but for the community of people around her who have grown up in the same position as her, going for auditions and kind of wanting to succeed, to see someone who felt so close to us, like being at the Oscars, I feel like this sense of, oh my God, like you can do, like it can happen, you know? Because it feels so alien, those big award shows with these big famous people, and to like the camera zoom in and to see Amelia and her mum Claire there, I was like, ah!
Have you spoken to her since the Oscars?
I have, and she sent me a lovely message about Heartstopper just saying,
oh, lovely,
how great it is, and she's just lovely.
So now Olivia, because I love this story, you didn't know that Olivia was going to be in Heartstopper.
No. So they had this like,
Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman, yeah. Just in case anyone didn't know. The Olivia. It's like Madonna. It's just one word.
Yeah,
well, Olivia.
One name.
They have a call sheet, which is kind of numbers of, you know, like just the cast, like just basically a list of the cast. And there was just this like mystery number three. And everyone was like, who's number three? They're playing Nick's mum. We don't know. And there were all these like rumors going around set of who it might be. And as a joke, we put one of the crew members' photo on number three, like the number three sheet. And so I sent a message to our, like, we've got a Heartstopper group chat. I was like, guys, I know who number three is. And I was about to send this like photo of one of the crew members. And I got this message from Kit being like, Patrick's just told us who it is. Like, don't tell anyone else. Like, we can't, like, people can't find out. And I was like, oh, I was joking. And Patrick, the producer, was stood next to Kit and Joe. And they were like, oh my God, Bash knows who number three is. And Patrick was like, okay, I'm going to tell you, but like, we have to keep this under wraps. And so like, it was kind of an accident how we ended up finding out originally, because until she was actually on set, I think they were like, didn't want to say anything.
Wow.
But yeah.
And how lovely is she as well?
So lovely. Like, just, I don't know how she has the energy for everyone, because it doesn't matter who you are. She doesn't just say hi. She will listen deeply, and she's incredible. She's like, truly, when you're in a room with her, you're just, I'm aware that I'm watching something like miraculous.
I think she'd be embarrassed for me saying this, but I would say that she's Judi Dench.
She's iconic. Yeah. And also I think that she won an Oscar and yet she would come and do a small part on our show because she loved the director, but also because she loved the story.
Yeah.
And I think as an actress now who has so much power and can choose where they put their time and energy and give something a voice, for her to like really go out of her way to be a part of the show and to support it, it's incredible, and she's incredible.
So now you've met Russell T Davies and he's back on Doctor Who. Are you going to be the new Doctor Who? Let's start that rumour.
Can we start that rumour? Yeah. Should we do both?
Okay.
But, yeah, at the same time.
All right.
Doctor Who and Bond.
All right, you have to choose. Okay. Right, here in my right hand,
yeah.
Doctor Who.
Easy
my left hand, James Bond.
Straight away.
You're going James Bond?
100%.
Well, what happens if Russell says he wants you to be Doctor Who and now he hears you say that?
I know. I mean, listen, Russell, it James was an either Bond. Or. I'm sorry. I've got to go for Bond. No, I mean, Bond was like...
Bond's in the future.
Me and my... No, I'd love to play a Bond villain. I think that would be so much fun. But me and my dad and my brother would watch Bond religiously, and it feels more than just like one of these franchises. It's like, it's very much a part of my family. And also, I'd love to see where Bond goes in the next few years and to open up.
Have they done young Bond?
They haven't. Listen, Barbara Broccoli, if you're listening.
No, but have they done a prequel?
No. There's eyes, guys.
Yes!
You can't see this on the podcast, but
yes!
there's an eye connection.
Okay.
Let's start this rumour.
Barbara! Okay, so you could be young Bond.
I'm loving this, by the way. If only casting was this easy.
Bash is Bond.
If only we could, like,
yeah,
you know.
Oh, I love casting. No, I love doing the casting.
This
game.
Is great. If you can cast me as Bond.
Yeah.
Happiness.
Let's see who. But I think your mother.
Yeah.
Kate Winslet.
I mean, what a compliment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Kate Winslet as your mum.
And then maybe like the show is about like
I know who your dad is.
A radio host assassin, and it's you.
Oh, but yeah. Can I be in it?
Okay, obviously.
Yeah. No, but your dad.
You cast me. Come on, you have
Paul
to be
Bettany
in it.
Paul Bettany as your
okay.
dad.
Wow.
Okay.
Lucky me. People are like, how did that happen from those two?
I'm the evil villain. Oh, yes.
You want to be a villain?
Yeah, no, I want to be
a villain. Also, because it's like a modern take on the spinny chair because you're in a radio chair.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Little White Cat is actually the microphone.
No, I'm allergic to cats.
But it's the you know, the like boom white, you stroke a microphone.
But I don't
that you
actually
interview
want
people
to
with.
Kill anybody because I don't like that.
Right.
So I want to be a villain.
So maybe you do like a Kingsman thing where you like don't like blood, but other people kill people for you.
No, I don't want anybody to get killed.
No one dies.
I know. Here's this.
The first pacifist Bond film. No.
Yes, but everyone has to be in a musical theatre show.
Yes.
There we go.
It should end with a musical number.
Yes.
007 strikes again. I think we've got. I think we should call some people.
That's it. Okay, that and Doctor Who. So Russell.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Doctor
I'm
Who.
So excited to see what he does with it.
It might be you.
Who knows? I mean, it won't be, but it might. Let's start that rumor.
Let's start that. Just before we wrap up, we got to talk about your music that you didn't want to talk about on the radio. So obviously. There is music.
There is.
It's obviously you don't want to talk about it because
smiling
and
not blushing. Not don't want to talk about it, but I have no idea what I'm doing with it. I just like writing music. Whenever I didn't have acting, I had writing music. And at school, I would frequently just Skype lessons / if I was having a shit time, just not show up and just spend my time like playing the piano and writing music. And it was so therapeutic and so lovely. And whenever friends come over and they want to hear music, sitting down in an evening and playing people's songs brings me so much joy. But I've got no idea where I'd take it, what I'd want to do with it. Like, it's hard enough to be a successful singer and a successful actor, let alone trying to do both at the same time. But at some point I'd love to do something with it because the thought of not share, like putting it out in the world makes me sad, even if only one person listens to it, because all of like, it's not kind of, I want to be a pop star. It's like,
yeah,
all of my music and every song I've written is reflective of a very important, either very good or very bad point in my life. And even like when I left school, the last thing I did was I did like a concert thing. And that felt like a real moment of confidence in playing my songs in front of people who didn't like me or hadn't been nice to me. And lots of these songs were about these people. And I was like, fuck you, I'm out of here. So music will always have a sense of like empowerment to me. So I'd love to do something with it, but I just don't know what.
You'll know when it's time though as well. Yeah. So don't let anybody push you into that. Like I said, you're a star. It's so exciting to talk to you now. And in another 10 years, when I come back and interview you again, hopefully I'll see you in between.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Another 10 years.
Don't have to wait 10 years until we see each other.
And you've got you and Amelia, and you've both got a couple of Oscars, and you've done Young Bond.
Imagine, it's happened. We've done our film, the musical James Bond.
Bless you.
Thank you so much for having
me.
Honestly, it's a dream. You're so lovely. And
please thank your lovely family as well.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Coming up next week, lovely Josh Cuthbert from Union J. That Gabby Roslin podcast is proudly produced by Cameo Productions and music by Beth Macari. Could you please tap the follow or subscribe button? And thank you so much for your amazing reviews. We honestly read every single one of them and they mean the world to us. Thank you so much for listening. Gabby Roslin podcast. Gabby Roslin
podcast. When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.